to the Dream Journal. From the studios of KSQD in Santa Cruz, the Dream Journal is a weekly show where we explore the power of nighttime dreams through conversations with dream experts and with listeners like you. A dream can be meaningful even if you don't know what it means. Today's music is called Multilude. Thank you, Rick. Nightmares. We all have them. Some of us have more than a few. Are nightmares caused by trauma? How can we work past our nightmares and start to look forward to going to sleep again? Our guest today is trauma specialist Linda Schiller. I am your host, Catherine Bell of Experiential Dreamwork, and welcome to the Dream Journal. I'm going to share real briefly a dream of mine that's not a nightmare. It's just a pleasant dream, and where I am getting ready to go windsurfing, and it's a perfect conditions. I can't find a board. I never actually get out on the water, but I just know I'll be able to. I've got like all my gear. I can think about what I'm going to need, and just this anticipation. There's something magical about flying across the water totally under the power of the wind. So this is just a lovely dream that I have. And just a few nights ago. So they're not all nightmares, you'll be glad to know, even though I do have quite a few. All right, let me say hello. Linda Schiller, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, Catherine, good to be here. Thanks for inviting me on.
Excellent. Yeah, Linda has been on the show a few times and it's always a treat. So good to have
Thanks.
You. So Linda Yael Schiller, MSW, LICSW, is an international teacher, psychotherapist, and dream worker. She is professor emeritus from Boston University School of Social Work and the postgraduate trauma certificate program. And she has three books. So we're going to talk today about PTS Dreams, Transform Your Nightmares from Trauma Through Healing Dream Work. Plus, there's her classic, Modern Dreamwork, New Tools for Decoding Your Soul's Wisdom. And finally, there is a third book, which is coming out this summer, and we will promise to have you back. You'll be back, right, Linda?
I'd be happy to.
Okay. Coming out this summer, her new book is called Ancestral Dreaming, Healing Generational Wounds with Active Dreamwork, and is currently available for pre-order through Llewellyn Publishing. Her webpage, well, she's got a series of web pages, but one of them I have right here is ptsdreams.com. I'll have all the links on the episode page. So, Linda, how are you doing today? What's up for you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm sitting here in Boston, and we had our first major snowfall of the season.
You did.
So it's freezing, but beautiful.
yeah, snow can be quite beautiful, can't it?
Yeah.
Excellent. So we have the topic of nightmares. You know, that's something that many of us have, many of them, and some have more than a few. And, you know, where do they come from? Like, are they all caused by trauma? Or is there, or, you know, and let's go ahead and define what trauma is.
So there's a couple of questions all sort of piled into that
one. Yes,
so
that's my style.
That's perfectly fine. I'll try to peel it apart.
Sure.
So sort of the difference between a dream, a bad dream, and a nightmare, right? This was sort of like three categories. And that is really determined by what I call the emotional narrative of the dream. So depending on your emotional response and your emotional reaction to the dream material, that determines what kind of dream it is. Mm-hmm. So for your dream that you mentioned earlier about going windsurfing and it's really fun and pleasant and you're flying across water, that's a nice dream. That's a good dream.
Yay.
If in the same dream, mm-hmm. instead of feeling like, oh, this is delightful and wonderful, you were saying, wow, you know, there's a storm coming in. I'm not sure if today's a good day. I'm feeling a little bit anxious about this. That might be a bad dream, but not really a nightmare, because mm-hmm. you're just a little bit upset about, gee, is this a really a good choice or not for me?
Right. I mean, even just the dream that I had could have been a difficult dream because of if I were frustrated by the fact that I wasn't on the water yet.
Right.
Yes.
So it's the feeling. And that same dream, and here's where we're looking at how the emotional narrative determines. If you're out on the water windsurfing, and it's not that there are clouds on the horizon, but a storm has come up and you're in the water and there's thunder and there's lightning and you're thinking, oh shit, am I going to get to shore safely? That might be a nightmare if you're feeling fear, dread, trepidation. Same dream, you're windsurfing, but depending on your emotional response, changes it to a nightmare.
So it's all about the emotional response in the dream. So when I'm writing down my dreams, I always make an effort to write down what I felt in the dream, because it often can change. And if I look at a bare narrative, it could be frustrating or just challenging. So writing down those emotions, really important.
Absolutely. And what's interesting, two things about that is the emotional response to the dream can change as you continue dreaming. Mm-hmm. So to write down, what am I feeling in the beginning of the dream? What am I feeling in the middle of the dream? What am I feeling at the end of the dream? Will give you a clue as to, is there something upsetting or stressful that you are working through in your dreams? Mm-hmm. So if you're starting out feeling upset or worried or scared, but by the end of the dream, you're feeling pretty calm or you're feeling pretty good, then whatever it is that your system is trying to process, you've done it, right? So in the dream, you can work through the upset depending on how the dream ends. If it's the reverse, if by the time the dream ends, you're feeling no better than in the beginning or even worse, then you have a nightmare on your hands and you need to do some work to get to the bottom of what is the source, what's it about, what do you need to know or do based on the fact that you're feeling distressed as a result of having this dream.
Okay. So what's next? So what causes nightmares? Let's start with that.
So nightmares can be caused by a variety of different things, and some that can be as mundane as, you know, we talk about dream digestion, right? So if you're digesting your events from the day before or from the week before, and you metabolize what has happened to you, then you wake up feeling better than the beginning of a bad dream. But in the same realm of the word digestion, sometimes literally you ate a food that didn't agree with you, and that could cause a nightmare. Absolutely, 100%. Hormonal changes in your system can cause nightmares. Mm-hmm. I've heard dreams from pregnant women, for example, that would just blow your socks off. Mm-hmm. And it really has to do with the hormonal changes during their 9 months of pregnancy.
Well, just saying they're also looking forward to some big changes in their lives and processing that as well, I'm sure.
Right. So as you pointed out, well, Catherine, it's multi-determined.
Yeah.
Right. So the why isn't a unilateral answer. There could be many reasons that can be simultaneously true, like there are hormonal changes and a big transition in your life, looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. And then another thing that can cause nightmares is pain, physical pain, uncomfortableness in your physical body, emotional pain. You're grieving. Now, grieving is something that's normal, but you also can still have nightmares if you've had a significant loss. And I'm mentioning this on purpose because there's a difference between normal processing of difficult life experiences, such as a transition, such as a grief of a loss of a loved one, and something that would fall into the category of a nightmare from trauma.
Okay.
So the dreams that come as a result of what we would call normative life experiences we all have ups and downs in our life, right? We all have our days that are bright and our days that are dark. And as we move through life, our dreams reflect what we're going through. Mm-hmm. However, if we're able to cope and if we're able to come to terms with and deal with whatever the slings and arrows are that we've been dealing with, or sometimes it's positive changes too, like, you know, having a baby is a positive change. You're getting married. You're very excited. You're happy about it, but you're also anxious and nervous. This is a big life change. It's a positive change, but it still can stir up uncomfortable feelings of worry or anxiety or how will this transition be for me? And those are different than trauma. Okay.
Okay.
So trauma is something that is an actual or perceived threat to your life or your well-being. So when I say actual or perceived, it may be in the realm of an actual threat that anyone would experience as life-threatening, such as a natural disaster, or being in a war zone, or being attacked or assaulted. It also can be something that feels like or as perceived as a threat to you in your system, even if you can't quite put your finger on what it is. Mm-hmm. So I would go on to say that often that second category would fall in the category of what we would call triggers or memories of actual threat. So when we, particularly if it's something that has gone on a long time, or even if it was a one-time incident, our mind replays it. We have, in waking life, we have what are called flashbacks or simply memories of the upset or the traumatic event we've been through, whether we were, you know, in an earthquake or there was a big storm or there was an assault. We remember that and our mind replays it until we kind of rinse it out of our system. If we're not able to rinse it out of our system, and if we don't have the support in our life and connection with other people to help hold us in this time, then some of the upset does not get processed, does not get digested, and stays inside of us. And that's when we start to get these repetitive dreams and repetitive nightmares. Sometimes the nightmares are literal replays of the event that occurred. And very often they come cloaked in symbol and metaphor. So while the emotions might be the same, the dream disguises what it's actually about. And then we have to do our associative dream work to be able to figure out what is this nightmare about. And then once we know, we can move on to doing the healing work. On one hand, once we know, we can move on to doing the healing work. And on the other hand, then we can get into this more later, there are things we can do with upsetting nightmares, even if we don't know why they're there or what they're about, mm-hmm. that we can work right inside the dream itself to do some healing that will then go back and affect whatever the source of the trauma is or was.
Oh, right. Okay, because like I think about things like the trauma of birth. I mean, birth is a really really intense event. Even under the best possible circumstances, it's a dramatic
change. For both the mother and the child.
Yeah, right. But even I'm thinking particularly for the child because I don't remember my birth, but you know, I was told I had an umbilical cord around my neck. And you know, there's lots of different kinds of traumas that people can go through even at birth, and yet I don't have memory from that time, and so any trauma from that event is going to show up as a kind of a metaphor, sounds like what you're saying.
That's a really good example, mm-hmm. Catherine, because clearly you survived, because here you are, and so the help that you needed was given, the umbilical cord was unwound from around your neck. But what is true for all of us before the age of about 3, when we start to have facility with language, is that our memories are encoded in somatosensory fashion. So we're not going to have memories of things that happened when we were prenatal or infants or very young children until we have developed the language skills to be able to put what we're feeling into words. Somewhere you know, between 2 and 3, when we get to have more facility with language, we get to say things in words. But before that, our memories are going to be coming in physical sensations, in waves of emotion, in things that are, by definition, hard to put into words.
Because we didn't have any words at the time.
Exactly right.
Right, okay. And so I also want to back up just a little bit and say that you're distinguishing between, so trauma, if there's an event, something happens that's a painful, dangerous, scary event, and some people, maybe even most people, work through that event through support from their families and their loved ones and through their dreams, and so the event heals itself over time, and others do not. And yet, so the trauma doesn't refer, perhaps, I mean, tell me, help me with definitions here. So does the trauma refer to the event itself or to the fact that you can't, that you're not able to get over it? You know, that it's stuck.
So the answer is yes.
Ah, okay.
It's both, actually.
I see.
Some of us are very thin-boundaried people. Ernie Hartman sort of coined that phrase of thick-boundaried and thin-boundaried people. And those of us who are thin-boundaried feel things more deeply. We take in things from our environment, from other people, more intensely than those who are thick-boundaried. And neither one is good or bad. It's just a different style of relating with the world. And we need both kinds of people because there are different tasks that we need to do to continue in the world. So there's sometimes no question that things just happen, whether it's a what we call a private trauma or a public trauma. Mm-hmm. And in my book, I distinguish between these two types and I add a third type as well. Mm-hmm. So a private trauma is something that happens and nobody knows. Mm-hmm. It's behind closed doors. It happens in the privacy of someone's home. It's abuse within the family system, in a youth group, in a church group, where someone is physically, emotionally, sexually abusive to another. But nobody else sees it. Mm-hmm. So you don't have external verification. And there's a whole layer of trauma there, particularly if the person who was the offender or the abuser literally or indirectly threatens, you know, don't tell, something bad will happen mm-hmm. to you or to your family if you tell. So then there's a whole additional layer there of guilt. And the question rises, did this really happen? Because mm-hmm. there's no one there to verify it. And it becomes he said, she said mm-hmm. kind of thing for external people who might be told about it. So that's one type of trauma. And so there's a couple of additional layers there that aren't present in public trauma. Because in public trauma, there's no question that something bad happened. There was a terrible hurricane and your house was flooded and so were your neighbors. And there's no question that all of you have been through a trauma. So there's not this additional layer of, is this true? Was it my fault? Am I making it up? That people who have private traumas, including growing up in, you name it, any kind of dysfunctional family, from abusive to substance abusing to narcissistic families, where the children somehow feel, oh, somehow it was my fault. And so that adds another layer to the trauma. So we have the private trauma, and then we have the public trauma. And then in the last bunch of years, when we don't all share the same news media,
right.
And depending on what you read or listen to, you get different news about the same event.
That's true.
And you're left sometimes unclear what actually really happened.
Mm.
So I'm calling this ambiguous public trauma that shares some of the categories of both public and private trauma, where you saw something or you witnessed something or you were in something, but then everybody is giving a different opinion about what really happened.
Hmm.
And some of the, just for example, police brutality cases that have come up, depending on what side of the street you were standing on, literally or metaphorically, you can say, oh, that was not police brutality. Or you can say, oh, yes, it was. I saw that. Or, no, that's not what happened.
Hmm.
So that's a little more ambiguous depending on your perspective there.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So that adds a whole nother layer of is it true or is it not? I mean,
Right. And that's what people struggle with certain types of nightmares. What is this? What am I dreaming about? What does this mean? What happened? And is it true or is it not? Did it happen or didn't it? Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is, if it feels upsetting to you, something happened. Hmm. And there's something for you to heal from, to understand, to move on from, whether or not anyone else knows about it, or whether or not there's external validation or verification. If you feel upset, that's all you need to say and know to be able to say, okay, there's some work for me to do here.
Hmm. Okay. All right. And yet all three of these kinds of trauma can result in nightmares.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Okay.
That's right.
Uh-huh. And so, of course, the dreams themselves are helping us work through these emotional situations. Like that's what they've evolved to do over millions of years to help us resolve. And sometimes they kind of get stuck. Like the case of the PTSD, you already mentioned flashbacks, and that makes me think of like intrusive thoughts. And the recurring nightmares can be a way of like indicating that the person is stuck. Like the emotional process, the healing process is stuck.
Right. It's like undigested food, right? Uh-huh. It's just like a lump in your stomach. You're not digesting it. You're not metabolizing whatever happened to be able to take in anything that you need to know from it and then let go of the rest. Mm. And that's the work of healing from a nightmare. Right. And the word stuck is a perfect word, because particularly when you have reoccurring nightmares where the actual same thing keeps happening in your nightmare over and over and over again, or you have thematic repetition, meaning it's not the same exact scenario, but the theme is the same, or the topic is the same, where in one dream you're dreaming about a tidal wave, and another dream you're dreaming about a rainstorm that's really intense, or another dream you're dreaming your shower got stuck and you can't turn it off, the water keeps flowing. Mm-hmm. So these are all different dreams, but there's a theme of being overwhelmed, being flooded would be the metaphor perhaps here. And so then we would want to wonder what, where, and how are you experiencing in your current life or in your past a feeling of being flooded? Mm-hmm. And then what can we do with the dream material to help you resolve that feeling of being flooded so that you can once again stand on dry ground and be safe?
Well, let's get to that. I have more questions, of course, but I want to get to the idea of what can we do? Like, so if we have these bad dreams, especially if they're recurring, what can we do to help the process of that emotional healing that the dreams are trying to do? What do you recommend?
Okay. Well, there's a lot of different things. And in PTS Dreams, I have a whole chapter that's called, I don't remember exactly how I titled it, but it's what can we do before, during, and after we have the dream.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So before, if you know that you tend to be nightmare prone, there's something you're trying to work out in your sleep, and it's more than you can really handle. You're waking up in the night, you know, gasping for breath, or you're panicked, or you're simply really uncomfortable and you can't figure it out because you're so uncomfortable. Before you go to sleep, get some safety into your room, into your bed, into your being, so that you can have some buffer between you and the things that go bump in the night, the thoughts, feelings, emotions, entities, spirits, memories, whatever they are that come in and flood your brain at night. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's similar in some ways to dream incubation. And incubation is simply you spend anywhere from one minute to, you know, 15 minutes, half an hour doing some writing in your dream journal about what you'd like to dream about, or in this case, what you don't want to dream about or don't want to dream too much about. So you can,
but you don't want to dwell on too much what you don't want to dream about, right? Because I mean, I could like lay there dreading my nightmares, and I think that might make me have more nightmares.
Right. So you don't frame it like, I don't want to be dreaming about the floods coming in and drowning me. You're not going to write that. Okay. But you want to dream. Please, to your dream muse, you can send a missive, if you will. Please send me only dreams that are not overwhelming to me. Please send me dreams where I can learn what I need to learn in a way that serves my highest purpose while still staying centered. Or please keep any bad spirits from the night away from me so I can sleep in peace. And ironically, many, many spiritual and religious traditions have nighttime prayers that say exactly this in all different languages. Something about keep bad spirits away, guard me while I sleep, protect me in my slumber. They have that in Islam, in Christianity, in Judaism, and I'm sure in Eastern religions as well. They have prayers that say this exact thing. So in addition to asking for a type of dream that you want, where you basically say, just so much and not anymore, you know, no more than I can handle, you can also surround yourself with protection before you go to sleep. Surround yourself with the light of healing and protection. And for some people, that's a white light. For some people, it's a golden light. For some people, it's a blue light. Many, many traditions actually speak about this blue light of healing, safety, and protection. And that is deep from Kabbalah. And it's also shows up in Christian and Islam traditions as well. And in Indian traditions, the avatars and the gods and goddesses are often shown with blue faces. So there's something particularly healing about a blue light, and it shows up often in our spiritual literature. But pick the color or colors that work best for you and surround your personal self with the lights, with your bed, your bedroom, your house. Whatever feels right to you. And you can also do things before going to sleep that give you a felt sense of safety and security. And particularly if you have a little sort of ritual that you do. So at night before you go to sleep, just for example, you lock your doors. You tuck in your children or your pets. You take a shower or brush your teeth. And as you shower, you wash away the residue of the day. You clean yourself consciously of anything I don't want to take into bed with me and go to sleep with. You have a little altar perhaps in your room of protective images, whether they're seashells or pictures or feathers or whatever, pictures of your relatives, whatever it is that helps you feel safe and protected, to spend a few minutes before going to sleep putting your attention on that altar space and inviting it to contribute to protecting you in the night.
Wow, I'm just picturing all these different rituals, and I'm feeling that sense of safety really surrounding us, which I think is beautiful, because I want to get into, after the break, we're going to have to take a short break here, but when we come back, we're going to talk about what could the other stages, we talk about what you can do before the nightmare, and then we're going to find out about what we can do during the nightmare and what we can do after the nightmare.
That's right.
All right. So this is Linda Schiller, and we're talking about nightmares and what we can do about them. PTSdreams.com is one of Linda's web pages, and we will talking a lot more about nightmares in just a few minutes. We're broadcast live from the KSQD studios in Santa Cruz and co-broadcast live in San Jose by KCXU. We'll be right back.
Come from is gone, your gone.
are listening to The Dream Journal. I'd like to send out a special welcome to our far-flung listeners, including from Los Angeles, Ashburn, Virginia, Emmaus, Pennsylvania, Margate City, New Jersey, and Natick, Massachusetts. People all over the country are interested in their dreams. And if you'd like to help us spread interest in dreaming, please follow The Dream Journal on your favorite podcast app. And if you're inspired, also you could leave a rating and a review. But most importantly, tell your friends. It's really all about getting folks talking about dreams. Please feel free to contact me if you'd like to be a guest on the show. You could talk about a new book or let folks know about your dream-related offerings. You can also go to Facebook and Instagram to find out about upcoming shows and pod drops. And follow hashtag The Dream Journal and at Experiential Dream Work. Next week, our guest will be Lisa Rigg. She's an IASD regional rep for the Bay Area, and she is a dream educator. She uses collages and poetry to express the dream's essence. Today's guest is Linda Schiller, an author of PTS Dreams, and we are talking about nightmares and what to do about them. So before the show, we talked about what to do before a nightmare. And now I'd like to talk a little bit more about what do we do during a nightmare and then after the nightmare. Linda.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
So in the category, we talked about a number of different things you might do before going to sleep at night. And now when I say during the nightmare, what can you do? Mm-hmm. There are a couple of things, and then we're going to move on to after you wake up, right, how you can work with the various layers of the dream. But between being wide awake and being sound asleep and having a dream, there's this in-between zone called the hypnopompic or the hypnagogic zone, Carl Jung named them. And that's that in-between state where you're not quite asleep, but not quite awake. And you have dreams and nightmares in those zones as well. And if you have a dream in that in-between state, it counts, if you will, as a real dream. It is a dream. So if you have enough awareness, you can notice that you're having a dream or having a nightmare and can say, oh, okay, this is a nightmare. This is not actually happening. You can bring a layer of waking consciousness to your dreaming self as you slide in or slide out of the deep dreaming state. Mm. So that's something you can do in the in-between state. And if you have enough awareness to still be able to purposefully and consciously move your body, you can change your sleeping position to a different sleeping position. Because we talked before about somatosensory memory for when before you're born, yeah, but all of our thoughts and our memories are also connected to our physiology. We know from studies of polyvagal theory and the vagus nerve that the brain-gut connection is physiological, not just imaginal. So if we change our position, we may be able to change the trajectory of the dream or nightmare. Mm-hmm. It's certainly worth a try. Right. And then this is the topic for a whole different show, so I'll just mention it briefly, is the category of lucid dreaming, right, which is when you are asleep and having a dream, or in this case, a nightmare, and at the same time, you know you're having a dream. So in the middle of the tsunami that's bearing down on you, you think, oh, I'm having a dream. I'm dreaming there's a tsunami bearing down on me, which is very different than not having that conscious awareness within the dream. So if you have some skill and ability to do some lucid dreaming, you can, right in the dream state, bring in allies, make some changes, move yourself in the dream to get out of harm's way, depending on what's going on. And there are many techniques that one can use to get better at lucid dreaming. The one I'll just mention quickly is if you practice looking at your hands, during waking life. And you say, if I see my hands, I'm looking at my hands right now as I'm talking. Mm-hmm. I'm modeling it. You can't see me. If I see my hands in my dream, that'll be a cue that lets me know I'm dreaming. So if you kind of practice that in your waking life, and then in your dream, you notice your hands, that will cue your both conscious and unconscious self to say, oh, this is a dream. Mm-hmm. So then you have the option of having some efficacy and control with inside the dream that you wouldn't ordinarily have.
Okay.
So here's a bunch of things you can do, you know, as you're sliding into or out of sleep or while you're asleep. But the majority of the work we do is after we wake up from the dream or nightmare. Mm-hmm. So sometimes if a dream is very upsetting, we have to do a lot of prep work before we deal with it directly, because we don't want to re-trigger ourselves or re-trigger the dreamer into what's called an abreaction, or having a bad reaction or response to simply talking about the dream. So whether it's your own dream or you're working with a dreamer, in my capacity as a therapist, I work with people with nightmares all the time. Mm-hmm. And also in my dream circles, of course, people would sometimes come in with nightmares, whether I was there as a in therapeutic capacity or as the facilitator of the group. But if someone tells you, oh, I've had a nightmare, before we get too excited and go, oh, tell me the nightmare, let's see what we can figure out what it's about. Mm-hmm. You want to first say, do you want to tell me the nightmare?
Right.
Because in our enthusiasm for wanting to unpack a dream, we might get ahead of the dreamer. Mm-hmm. So we want to lead from behind, not from in front. And so we want to really respect the pacing of the dreamer as to what is the right pace for them. So we don't have to go, I'm going to share the process of working with the Gaia method, which is guided active imagination method that I designed. And we don't always have to go, this is slow, but when we're working with really terrifying dreams or repetitive dreams, it's always better to err on the side of caution so that we are protective of the dreamer and his or her space. So I will ask, and when each time I'll ask, I'll wait for the yes response before going to the next stage. So one is someone says, oh, I had a nightmare. The next thing I might say is, would you like to tell me the nightmare? And if they say yes, I might say, is there anything you need to feel safe enough right here, right now, to share the nightmare before you even say it out loud? So depending on what they say, either they say, no, I'm good. I'm here with you. I'm here with the group. I can just tell you the nightmare. We say, okay, go ahead. But sometimes people say, no, just thinking about it is really terrifying. In which case I say, well, let's back up then. And let's bring in your healing posse. Let's bring in your resources to the room with you, with us right now, to make sure that you feel sufficiently safe, protected, and grounded to be able to tell the dream without getting distressed by it. So then I will ask the dreamer, who in their life, a real person, an imaginary person, a spiritual being, a pet, someone alive or no longer alive, would they like to have in their healing protective posse? And the range can be anything from, I've heard all different kinds of responses to my partner or my friend, or there was a teacher I really liked when I was in third grade who was my favorite teacher, or my cat, or my dog who's already died a few years ago, but I loved her and I've still connected to her and feel safe with her. One of my clients said, I'm going to bring Gandalf from Lord of the Rings in to be my protector. And one of the kids I worked with, I thought brilliantly, said, I'm bringing Mary Poppins because she can do anything. So I said, that's a great choice. So we gather this posse of beings. And we can bring Archangel Gabriel, we can bring Jesus, we can bring the Shekhinah, we can bring any spiritual being. And then I'll also check to see, Are there any objects that you would like to have to bring with you before we look at the dream that you will feel grounded and safe when you have them with you or on you? And often people will say, yes, I have, some people will say, oh, it's my wedding ring. Or some people will say, there's this book that I love. I'm going to bring this book with me.
Now, this is in our imagination. You don't necessarily
This is in our imagination. Okay. Yeah, but we're creating an atmosphere and an environment of safety so that when we go to the dream material itself, we're not overwhelmed again, like we were originally.
Right.
So in the dream, for example, there's a way of measuring the level of distress. It's called the SUDS level. And SUDS stands for subjective unit of distress. And this is a phrase borrowed from trauma treatment. And it's like when you go to the doctor's office and you're asked to rate the pain on a scale of 0 to 10. How bad is it? Mm-hmm. So we ask the dreamer, when you had this dream or when you woke up from this dream on a scale of 0 to 10, how big is the upset? And if it's more than a 5, we probably want to check to see if they need some resources before talking about the dream, right? Less than a 5, it's like, okay, this is upsetting, but it's tolerable, I'm probably okay. But again, that's going to determine on the dreamer, him or herself, what they want. One person brought, she said, before I tell you the dream and before I go working with the dream, I'm going to make sure I have my cell phone, because in the dream, I felt helpless and I felt trapped and I couldn't communicate with anyone. So I'm going to be sure I got my cell phone with me now. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to make sure all my contacts are in my phone. And then one person said, and you know, my phone has a really good flashlight. So even though it was dark in my dream, I can put the flashlight on my phone in case I need it.
Cell phones as modern security objects. I love that.
Absolutely brilliant, right? So we can bring our sword and shield, right? And those are great protection. One of my clients had, you know, Xena, warrior princess, with her sword and shield coming in on her white steed to keep her safe. And then someone else had her cell phone. So, you know, it's all good. So once we've got all the protections we need, then we listen to the dream, if we haven't heard it already. And we ask the dreamer, the next step is, this is the bridge. There's part one, the bridge, and part two in the Gaia method. So part one is establishing safety, safe space, safe people, safe objects to create that cocoon of safety around us. The bridge, before we do the act of dream work, is we invite the dreamer to look into their dream from the outside before dream re-entry, going into the dream, to see if there might be any resources or safety in the dream that they might not have mentioned or they might not have noticed at first. So if we peek into the dream from the outside and someone says, oh, now that you mention it, there was this high cliff with some stones leading up to it that I could actually easily climb those stones and not have the water flood me. It's like, oh, great. That's great to notice. They were there before, but you forgot to mention it or didn't see it. But that adds a sense of self-efficacy to the dreamer. Oh, there were things I already had within me. Or someone once told me, you know, when I'm looking around, I was in the forest and it was dark and I was really scared. But when I look around more closely, I see under the tree, there's this little figure with like a red hat, and it's like an elf. And I think this is a protective sprite for me, like a little woodland sprite. And I guess they must have been there before, but I'm just seeing them now. So I say, great, we'll add them to your posse of protection. They were already there for you.
Nice.
Yeah. And so once we've done part one, and then we've done this bridge, then in part two, we invite the dreamer to gather all their resources and go into the dream. This is called dream re-entry. And this is where Jung's active imagination comes in, because we can, it's your dream, whatever it was based on, whatever traumatic or upsetting events in your life happened, it's still the dream that came through to you. And you can then, it's a form of lucid dreaming while awake, if you will.
Okay.
So you can go into the dream with your posse, and let's say there was a giant or a monster. Very often that's a metaphor for something, but there's a monster chasing you in the dream and you're running and you're panicked and you're scared. But this time, because you've got your posse and protection, you have choice. So this time I say, with all of the protective objects and beings and places you've now gathered, as you're running from the monster now, what would you like to have happen, or what would you like to do differently than how the dream actually ended? So in the dream itself, in the nightmare, if the person woke up gasping for breath, the giant is chasing them, the monster is chasing them, it's breathing down their neck, and any minute they're going to be caught, or maybe they were already grabbed by the heel, and then they woke up. And that's a common type of dream scenario. You're just about to have something terrible happen. But this time, what can you do instead? So then the dream worker works with the dreamer, or you can do this yourself, either in writing or sort of talking to yourself in dialogue. It works better with scary nightmares if you've got at least one other person to do it with, because we heal in connection, and having community and connection helps us to access those places in ourselves where we're already hardwired for healing. So that connective relationship with someone else helps us move forward in doing this work. So you can say, okay, well, this time I am going to put up an imaginary wall that's clear between me and the monster. So the monster just crashes into the wall and can't touch me. Oh, okay, that sounds good. So then I might say, and then what happens? So I'm going to let the dreamer move through this process with me simply asking, and then what happens next, unless and until they get stuck? I'll let them create a different scenario. So let's just take the one that I articulated for a minute. The monster was chasing them, was just about to catch them. The dreamer magically pushes a button on their device, and a clear wall comes up between them and the monster. So now they're standing on the other side of the wall panting, and the monster's standing on his or her side of the wall, like pounding on the wall. So I say, and then what happens? So if this were your dream, Catherine, what would you like to happen next? Just for example, what would be your next step?
Well, I'd like to have a conversation with that monster.
That's probably one of the best choices. Yeah. And so I would, because we don't know why the monster is chasing you.
No, I want to know. I'm curious. Now that I'm not terrified, because I've got all the support around me, and I've got this plexiglass wall between me and, or something stronger, between me and the monster, I'm like, well, what's happening? Why?
That is one of the wisest things to do, and that takes us. You can tell, listeners, that Catherine is a dream worker because she was right there, right? No, messing about. She's going to go right straight to talk to this monster, because we know that there's some reason why her psyche is giving her a monster chasing her. The monster has something to do or tell her that she needs to learn or know. So that's a great choice. So then, if this were your dream, for example, what would you say to the monster?
Well, I guess I would say, you know, there's something going on that I don't understand, and maybe I never will, because especially if it's like a pre-verbal thing that's been chasing me, maybe I'll never know. But I guess I want to know, it's like, what can I do to make friends with you, to access your power rather than to be running away from it? Like, what do I need to change in my life? Or, you know, how can we become allies? I guess that would be the way I'd say it.
So everything you said was really spot on and brilliant. And most people wouldn't start there.
Okay.
So I'm going to just back up. And what you can start with is simply, you're facing the monster, and you might want to say things like, who are you? Or who the hell are you? And why are you chasing me? Mm-hmm. What do you want from me? Right. Is there something you want from me? Mm-hmm. Right? Because ideally, you do want to do exactly what you said. Make friends with the monster. Find out if they have a message or potentially a gift for you. Yeah. Become allies with them. Get them to stop chasing you and terrifying you. But most people can't get there immediately. Right. They have to kind of go through a little process first.
Well, Linda, we only have a few minutes left of the show, but Max has a question here sitting in the studio.
Okay.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, Max.
Okay, so I love this approach you have through the nightmares, but I have one question. That's when you step in and you change the dream a little bit consciously, like a lucid dreamer. Do you change the message of the dream ever?
I'm not exactly sure what you mean by the question. Can you clarify?
Okay. So like the dream's trying to show you something. Mm-hmm. And if you change the way the outcome of the dream in some conscious way, are you not changing perhaps the message you're getting from the dream?
Hmm. That's a really, really good question. So before changing the outcome, you want to create a safety scenario for yourself inside the dream that wasn't there before. So you haven't changed the dream in any way yet, but you've allowed yourself to be safe inside the dream. From that place of safety, behind your glass wall or inside of your magic bubble or wearing your suit of armor or whatever it is, you get to find out what's going on that you were too scared or threatened to know before. Mm. And once you have the information, it's the same information that was there in the dream originally, but this time you get to hear it from a place of protection rather than a place of threat. So your autonomic nervous system is not going to say, I'm going to die and I have to either, you know, fight, flight, or freeze. You're not going to be set into, you know, shutdown mode or fleeing mode because you've got safety. So you'll be able to find out what the message actually is. And then once you know, you move on to dialogue with the being or with the scenario until you find out what it is you need to know. And then you have choice, right? Okay. So the power of doing this kind of dream work is first you have safety, then you have awareness, and then you have knowledge. And once you have safety, awareness, and knowledge, you have choice.
Linda, this is fabulous. And I love that summary. Thank you for the question, Max. That was helpful. And we are just about to the end of our time. And I want to tell listeners about an upcoming Zoom program and workshop sponsored by Hayden Institute, called Understanding and Healing Nightmares Through Active Dreamwork, which Linda will be hosting on Sunday, January 12th. And I'll find a direct link and I'll put it in the episode page so you can look that up. And what else do you have upcoming? We haven't even touched on your upcoming book, but like I said, you'll come back in the summer when it comes out. And the book we are talking about today is PTS Dreams, Transform Your Nightmares from Trauma Through Healing Dream Work. What else do you have that you want to let listeners know about?
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Well, I have that Hayden workshop coming up, and then I also have another thing. Actually, through Hayden, they have a conference in February that I'll be speaking at. And both at the Hayden conference in February and at the IASD, the International Association for the Study of Dreams, this year our annual conference is going to be online. Mm-hmm. And at both the February conference for Hayden and the IASD conference, I'm going to be speaking about ancestral healing through dream work.
Wonderful.
And that's the topic of my new book. And in it, I'm looking at what have we not only had happen to us in our own life, but we're going to be looking at the epigenetics of inherited intergenerational trauma.
Oh, wonderful.
And I'm going to outline six ways that our ancestors might be trying to contact us through our dreams, and then the six different responses we will need depending on if they're contacting us just to say, hi, I'm here, I love you, or they're saying, oh, we're hungry ghosts and we're not done with you yet.
Right, okay. Well, we'll look forward to that, Linda. It's great to have you on the show. PTSdreams.com is your webpage, and let's stay in touch.
Great. Thank you so much for having me on, Catherine.
All right. Thank you, Linda. Bye now.
Okie doke.
Yes. So thank you all for listening. The Dream Journalist produced at the studios of KSQD in Santa Cruz, and we are live every Saturday at 10 a.m. Pacific at ksqd.org. The podcast is released on the Monday after the show. It spreads interest in dreaming when you subscribe, rate, and review. I'm Catherine Bell. You can find out about my dream coaching practice at experientialdreamwork.com. Email me at catherine@ksqd.org, KATHERINE. You can follow Experiential Dreamwork and hashtag The Dream Journal on Facebook and Instagram to find out about upcoming shows. I'd like to thank Rick Kleffel engineer and music creator. You can find his music at pandemia.com. Audio editing by Suki Wessling. Phones by Eric Nelson. Intro and outro pieces are both by Mood Science. And tomorrow morning when you wake up, take a minute to write down your dream and bring it to the next Dream Journal.